Welcome in to another episode of We're Talking. Today we're talking Raging Cajuns women's basketball, Raging Cajuns men basketball, and the most wonderful time of the year, baseball, with Mr. Jay Walker. How are you, Jay?
I'm excited. You know, it was in Clearwater with the softball team. That was a great experience. Got home, jumped right into baseball over the weekend, getting ready to go to Pensacola. It's a very hectic time of the year for me and for the producers and all of the other folks, and the talent as well. But it's an exciting time. You know, baseball's 2 weeks away from opening conference. Softball's getting ready to go to another great tournament. And, hey, it's conference tournament time in basketball.
Yeah, I hadn't realized about that softball until I forgot who I was talking to mentioned that they were headed to Austin to watch softball.
So that's... Yeah, they're going to play. I can't off the top of my head tell you all the teams are going to play. They're going to play Texas twice. They're going to play McNeese. They're going to play Princeton. And then there's one other school, and I can't remember who it is.
Yeah. Was it Sam Houston, maybe? I don't know.
I just don't know.
Yep. So let's talk a little basketball first.
Oops.
Women's basketball. Let's start out there.
You know, it was a disappointing week, all right? The Cajuns were still in a position to get a top four seed. They needed to win both games and needed a little help. But they lost to Texas State, which knocked them out of the top four mathematically, and then lost to Southern Miss, which, because of James Madison's inexplicable loss that they had, gave a piece of the conference championship to Southern Miss. So and I mistakenly said the other night that the Cajuns would play Arkansas State in their first game, which would not have been a good thing because Arkansas State's starting to play pretty good basketball. But as it turns out, they're playing App State. So, you know, I can give you a scenario. They're playing App State, who they beat earlier this year in Boone. You win that, you're going up against Texas State, who you've already beaten this year by 20 in San Marcos. And then, if you get that one, you've got a chance maybe to get Southern Miss, who you lost to once by 1 point and once in overtime. So you're very capable of winning your way to the championship game. The bracket sets up well for Gary Broadhead's team. Now, I personally think that James Madison, from a talent standpoint, you know, should have won this league going away. I just think they're the best team in the league. And at the same time, they've stubbed their toe enough to where, you know, you wonder, can they be vulnerable? But, you know, you get that first one. Texas State, I think, would be the toughest game of the three because Zenery Antoine's team's playing very well right now. And they would be the two seed. But I don't look at a game on the Cajuns' path and say, okay, they can't win that one.
It always seems also that Gary Broadhead gets the most out of his team during tournament time.
Oh, I agree with that. I agree with that. His team's going to be ready. And, you know, every year you talk to coaches and they say they don't particularly like to play Gary during the tournament because they defend so well and they kind of muck things up and make you play ugly. And, you know, some teams don't do well playing ugly.
I had a question for you, and you started talking about ugly, and I'm just looking at your face, and I'm going...
Yeah, I know.
Sorry, but no, I forgot what that question was. But the women's game, 7:30 on Wednesday night?
7:30 Wednesday, and then you win, you play 7:30 Friday, and then you win, you play 2 o'clock on Sunday, and the championship game is 1 o'clock on Monday.
You know what I think? Well, women's basketball going to the four quarters eliminated one of the timeouts on the TV timeouts because of the way they go four quarters now. And it's actually speeds up the game. They play about 1 hour and 50 minutes
usually. No, it speeds up the game till the last minute.
Yeah, well.
And then it takes a half hour to play the last... No, look. If there's one thing that I've learned this year, it's that I am totally against this four-quarter thing if you're going to allow the ball to be advanced to midcourt, because nobody's going to call a timeout. They're going to want to save them. And then you're going to have eight timeouts in the final minute of the game. The officials have to go to the monitor about five times. It takes a half hour to play 1 minute and at the end of a women's game if it's a tight game.
I agree with you if it's a tight game. And I also agree with you. I hate that advancing the ball because I think that's part of the game, taking the ball in and forcing you to go the length of the court. I hate that rule. But then again, I also hate the automatic two shots. I think there should be one and one. There should be no two shots after 10 fouls. Free throws are part of the game. So I'm a hater.
Yeah, you pretty much are.
All righty. Women's basketball, exciting time. Wednesday at 7:30, and hopefully they're making it to Friday at 7:30. So let's move on to the men's bracket, though. I did not get to see Friday night's game against South Alabama, but the Cajuns took care of business. It already secured that number, that first round double bye, or first two rounds bye. So let's talk about that game. Jordan Brown seemed to play his best game of the year.
Jordan Brown made everybody look like an amateur while he was a professional. You know, he's got 28 and 12. And he goes 2 for 11 from the free throw line. Okay. Yeah. You know, if he shoots 50% from the free throw line, he's sitting there going 32, 33 points. It's the best game I've seen him play. And I've been watching him for 2 years. Best game I've seen him play. It was interesting to note, though, that before the game, I always asked Coach Marlin, I said, okay, give me three things that have to happen. He said, 3-point shots are going to be huge. He said, we need to make 8 to 10 of them. And I told him after the game, I said, Coach, if I would have told you that Greg Williams was going to get 2 points and you were going to make 2 3-point baskets, do you think that you'd be celebrating an undefeated season? He said, no, probably not, you know. But they did a lot of other things well. And, of course, Jordan just put the team on his back. It was a nice win over what had been the hottest team in the league. They'd won 8 of their last 9. That was an impressive win.
Riley always seems to have his teams playing well at the end of the season. And I kind of waited for that same thing to happen to Georgia State. But they never did catch fire or do what they...
They just weren't very good.
Yeah.
You know, they lost all their starters and their best sixth man transferred to Troy. And so they didn't have much. And, you know, I think that... That the coach over there is going to do a good job at Georgia State because, look, Georgia has unlimited talent in basketball. That's a very good basketball state. So he's going to get his share right there at Atlanta. But it was a medicine year for them, you know. After all the success they had, they're having a medicine year. And you know who feels sorry for them in the league?
Nobody.
Nobody. Nobody. You know, I looked at that. You know, I'm not a big fan of Mike Bellotto at Arkansas State. The guy's kind of a hothead. And, you know, there have been a couple of times where I think he's, pardon the expression, showed his ass. And so I'm not a big fan. I got to give him a little some props, though, because Arkansas State, and they're seated like 12 or 13, 13, I think. They've been decimated by injuries, okay? Right after Norchad Omir says, I'm staying, and Desi Sills says, me too, they changed their minds. Sills is now playing at Kansas State. Omir is over at Miami. So he was kind of behind the eight ball to start with. And I didn't think Arkansas State was going to be a contender. But with all the injuries that they've had, and there have been a couple of nights where they've had 6 scholarship players stressed out, that team's continued to play hard for him. And they have not been an easy team to beat down the stretch. They haven't won much, but they've not been an easy team to beat. I'm not going to be surprised if they beat Coastal Carolina, who's gone in the tank. They've lost 9 out of 10, and then go ahead and get to Friday. Now, I don't think they get anywhere past Friday, Thursday, Friday. I have so much trouble. But, you know, I mean, props to them. The other team, before we start talking about the heavyweights, the other team is Texas State. two-time regular season defending champions. And they finish 11th. And they finish 11th because all of Danny Casper's players are gone. And Terrence Johnson has not replaced him. He's still got the point guard, Mason Harrell, who's still one of the best guards in the league, even though he missed three games with a rib injury and really hadn't been 100%. But Johnson hadn't recruited very well. The players that he's got to be along with Mason Harrell are okay, but it's not what he inherited from Danny Casper.
Not at all.
You know, it's going to be interesting because in the quarterfinal round coming up on Saturday, I can make a case for the top four seeds losing. All right? If all goes according to seed, South Alabama's going to be playing Southern Miss. South Alabama just beat them by 30 10 days ago. The two seed are the Cajuns. They trailed by 19 at halftime against Georgia Southern, who was playing without Sabrasov, who's their best player. So, you know, you're going to get a different Georgia Southern team. The three seed is Marshall. Them and Old Dominion, that's a rivalry game, and anything can happen in that. And don't tell me that Troy's not capable of beating James Madison. So the quarterfinal round, which usually is not, and look, it's very possible the top four seeds will advance, but a lot of times it's obvious the top four are going to advance. I think all four of the top seeds are going to have their hands full.
Yeah. Does the top four seeds lose a little bit of disadvantage since there's a day in between those games?
Well, you're playing Tuesday and then Thursday.
And then Saturday.
And then Saturday. Okay, so yeah, the teams that have to play in the second round, yes, they're going to get a day off after that. But you still got to win four versus winning three. You can't tell me that four is an advantage.
I agree.
Okay.
I was just, you know,
this is all going to be, Craig, this whole tournament's going to be about matchups because there's a lot of talent that's kind of equal, and teams have their own strengths and their own weaknesses. I think the team Marshall didn't want to play before the finals was Louisiana because Marshall, with exception of and a chili killing, they have no physicality inside. They got the big 7-foot freshman, Han Logdon, but he's not a physical specimen. And the Cajuns' inside game can just eat that up.
And we saw that in the Cajun Dome.
Yes. Now, the reason the Cajuns won that game, besides that, Marshall has the best guard trio in the league. And if you suggest anybody else, you're wrong. All right? And Kinsey and Taylor, and then the guy who's the great shooter whose name always escapes me, they've got no peers in this league. The reason the Cajuns were able to beat Marshall the way they did is they took two of those three out of the game. That's the only way you can beat Marshall. Because if the three guards have a good game, you're going to lose.
What is the key? And I don't want to look ahead because Georgia Southern, ULM, the Cajuns play the winner of that game, which even though the Cajuns dominate ULM, I think ULM is capable of beating the Cajuns. Capable. I'm not suggesting they will.
I don't think they're going to beat Georgia Southern. Okay. And look, ULM's lost seven in a row. All right. We've said all season long when they got off to a hot start, they're playing only six guys. It's going to catch up with them sooner or later. And it has. I think, you know, the two guards, LaCour and Blackman, I think they've kind of lost their legs a little bit because they're playing 38 minutes a game.
Yeah, Blackman scored 3 points against the Cajuns.
Yeah, I think that's a team that's just run out of gas.
Okay, I agree with you, and I do think Georgia Southern, to your point, is a very dangerous team. So I don't know that you want to pencil. There's no chalk, in my opinion.
No, there really isn't. You know, Southern Miss, and congratulations to them for winning the regular season championship. But that's not a team without flaws either. Now, Alvarez coming back really helps them because it gives them another guard scoring threat that Mo Arnold doesn't bring to the table. One of the things that makes Southern Miss so good is you've got a guy playing the three who's a lot bigger than anybody else's three man. You know, and I'm talking about Hase, who's about 6'8", 6'9", and he's playing the small forward. He's a very difficult matchup for everybody in the league. Crowley, obviously, is a very good guard. The guy on that team that doesn't get enough credit is Pinkney, because he can shoot the three, he can shoot off the dribble for a guy who's playing really playing a lot in the post and the four spot. But Southern Miss, with exception of Alvarez, doesn't have a lot of quality depth off the bench, and they've got the guy who's been the missing link. It's Denaje Harris, who some nights is going to go out and get you 12-6, and some nights he's going to get you 0-0. And I think if there's an Achilles heel for Southern Miss, it's at that position, because if Harris is having a bad night, you don't have to worry much about him. You can go concentrate on other folks, and I think that makes Southern Miss vulnerable. But when they've got it going on, they're awfully good, and they've earned that regular season championship. And you know, Jay Ladner, you know, Southern Miss fans were screaming for him to get fired. But it's amazing what happens when you can go get some good players. The thing that impresses me about Southern Miss is not only did they go get a bunch of new players, but a lot of times you go get new players and it means bad chemistry. But they've had great chemistry all year long. And props to them. Because we look at what Richie Riley's been doing, bringing in 8 transfers every year and underachieving every year because they had bad chemistry. Southern Miss has got great chemistry despite the fact they got a ton of new players. That doesn't happen very often.
I agree with all those points, especially the Riley point. But he does have his team playing well right now. But I agree with you on Southern Miss. I'm anxious to see what they do on a neutral site court and if they're able to bring some fans to Pensacola.
Well, they will. A little closer. They will bring fans. But, you know, they're not playing at home.
Yep.
Neither are the Cajuns. Okay, these are two teams that did not lose at home this year. They are not playing at home. On a neutral court, a lot of things even out. And we'll see what happens with that. You know, James Madison, unfortunately, I didn't get to see them. Because I was in Clearwater when the Cajuns played them last week. They got a nice club. Mark Byington does a really good job there. You know, their quarterfinal matchup with them and Troy could be really, really interesting.
The one thing I noticed about when the Cajuns played both of them, James Madison and Southern Miss, when we played them on the road, very strong student section, which we know what our student section does for this team when they're playing at home. So it'll be interesting to see who can get some students there.
Well, it'll be easier for Southern Miss and South Alabama more than anybody else, because they'll be the ones that are closest to Pensacola. But this is, I think this is going to be one of the more competitive tournaments that we've seen, with the best talented teams that we've seen as a group in a very long time. I mean, this is going back when Lou Henson was at New Mexico State and they were challenging for a division championship, and Western Kentucky was Western Kentucky and Middle was Middle, and the Cajuns were the Cajuns, and anything could happen. It's kind of the way I feel about that. I can't wait to get there.
Let's talk about the Cajuns, but let's take Jordan Brown out of the equation here. The other guys, we notice, you know, one night is Terrence Lewis. One night is Greg Williams. One night is Kendrell Garnett. Are those, when they're not playing well, and I say playing well, sometimes it's because they're focusing on the defense. Kendrell Garnett usually takes the best point guard, the guard on the team. But it seems like someone always steps up.
Well, you know, matchups and the losses that the Cajuns had down the stretch, you didn't have somebody step up. And one of the reasons the Cajuns have been so successful is you've got the best big man in the league, bar none. But you can't just sell out and worry about taking that guy out of the game, because Garnett and Williams and Dalcourt and Joe Charles are capable of just murdering you from the outside. In order for the Cajuns to win, those guys have to shoot the basketball. And they had a few games down the stretch where none of them got hot from three-point range. I mean, the Cajuns won the other night. We talked about the Jordan Brown playing the best game of his career. Cajuns had 2 3-point baskets. Jalen Dalcourt made one. Michael Thomas made the other. And so as a result, I think that you were right, as the Cajuns were, you know, on a winning streak and stuff. In order to win this tournament, the Cajuns are going to have to get good perimeter play. They're going to have to shoot the basketball well. If they do that, and the other team has to worry about that and Jordan Brown, then I think that team is in trouble. But at least one of those guys has got to step up and say, okay, you want to do that? Look what I'm going to do to you. Watch.
Lastly, or should I say, any last thoughts on the conference tournament?
You know, I do the Cajuns on the radio, okay? But I really don't look at things with vermilion and white glasses. I try to be a lot more analytical. I'm not as analytical as our buddy Mike Hebert, but I'm still analytical. I still like to break things down. I still like to look at matchups. Doing what I've been doing and working with as many coaches, I've learned a lot about the game of basketball. I'm not guaranteeing anybody anything, but I feel better about the Cajuns going to this tournament even better than I felt in 17-18 when they got knocked off and upset in the semifinals. I got a really good feeling about this team. And I don't know if they're going to win it or not. Heck, they might lose in the quarterfinals. But I'm going there saying, you know what? I got to make sure my paperwork's done for next week just in case.
Absolutely. You've been listening to We're Talking. We've been talking basketball, Raging Cajun basketball, both men's and women. We're going to take a short break, and then Jay and I will be back to talk baseball. Welcome back in to We're Talking. We're talking baseball, Raging Cajun baseball. Jay, you know, when I started this podcast, I named it We're Talking because of the song, We're Talking Baseball.
Do not sing.
Do not sing.
This might be your blog, but do not sing.
But, you know, that was the whole idea of it because, but I didn't want to be in a rut with just baseball. I wanted it to be sports, bourbon, and we will have a bourbon podcast coming up soon. But just, we're talking different things, and both yours and my first love is baseball. So, 4-game series this weekend against BYU. Overall, the Cajuns have had 75 4-game conference series, and they've only swept those 4 games 16 times. Very low percentage of winning 4 games in a row against a team.
And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to tell you that they probably beat the best competition they've had ever in a 4-game series.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because you look at some of the teams, 3 of them were against Prairie View A&M. Yeah. Mm-hmm. 2 of them were against McNeese, but those were a doubleheader in Lake Charles on a Friday and then a doubleheader in Lake Charles back at Lafayette on Saturday. So a different dynamic, 7-inning games back then. But still, I agree with you. I think that it's the best competition that we've had.
You know, if you look, the Cajuns have won 4 one-run games out of their six wins. The one loss they had was a tie going into the eighth inning. So they've done a very good job of producing late, which is the sign, I think, of a mature team. Now, there are going to be folks that are going to look at it and they're going to say, yeah, but what about all the free base runners? And they certainly have been there. But I go back to that 2-1 game, the one game I missed, and I'm looking at the thing afterwards, and the Cajun bullpen walks five. They didn't give up a hit. So that tells me that with these guys in the bullpen, the stuff is there. And if they're able to cut down on pitching behind in the count or getting ahead in the count and then losing guys, if they cut down on the free base runners, this is going to be a pretty solid pitching staff. Now, I still don't see Gunnar Leger out there. I still don't see Zach Osborne out there, and I still don't see Scott Doman out there. But this would be a good, it'll be a good staff, I think, with a good and very versatile bullpen. Now, the one thing that Seth Thibodeau is going to tell you is the thing that he's looking for the most now, and that's consistency. We saw two very good starting performances by Brendan Moody and Tommy Ray, and we want to see him again. Okay, Moody's going to go tomorrow night against McNeese, which tells me that Ray's probably going to get the game one start against Campbell. We want to see them, okay, you did it once. Can you do it again? Go show me you can do it again. We got to get Blake McGeehee healthy and get him comfortable as a redshirt freshman. And, you know, I talked to a lot of people, not the head coach, and but I talked to a lot of people in the offseason, talked to a lot of players, talked to managers, talked about, and I said, all right, so give me three guys. Well, they all had Jake Hammond. But you know what? They also all had Jackson Nizu. And he's gotten cuffed around his first two starts. Don't be surprised if they get him back out there tomorrow night in a relief role against McNeese, because they got to get him going. His stuff is very good. He has just gotten off to a really bad start. And you know, when you come in and you're getting a fresh start and you get cuffed around twice in a row, well, there goes that confidence thing. And so the best thing you can do is get the guy back out there rather than let him sit on the bench and brood. You got to get him out. Because, look, they're going to need him. Absolutely. They're going to need him. You know, I think in a perfect world, I think if Ray, Moody are consistent, and either McGeehee or Nizu, either one, step up and are ready to go, and you can have that for a weekend rotation, the fourth guy takes care of the midweek, and then you have, toward the back end, guys like Marshall and Toit, and now you can move Jake Hammond back there if these other guys have stepped up as starters. And Cooper Rawls, who I think's thrown really well the times that I've seen him so far. You got those four guys in the back. And now you got Fluno, who Seth Thibodeau believes can be another Bo Bonds for the Cajuns, and can be at the back end as well, or he can be the first guy up on a bad night like Bo Bonds was. This could turn out to be a good staff. And then you've got some other guys who have pitched a little bit that, you know, they're going to get more opportunities. Seth told me the thing that he liked about this staff versus last year's staff. He said, I think we have more quality depth. And so far, I think that's showing through. Now, quit hitting people, quit walking people, and let your stuff speak for you. And if they're able to do that as the season goes by, this is going to be a good staff. Now, we know this team's going to score, and the thing that nobody talks about, this team's really good defensively.
Absolutely.
They've made four errors in their first seven games. Their fielding percentage is .984. They're not going to finish that way. But C.J. Willis has shown he can handle stuff at second base. Marshak looks very comfortable at third. And the outfield is what the outfield is, and Julian Brock is who Julian Brock is. Zambo's done a good job on defense as well. I Tony's talked about pitching and defense, timely hitting, okay? Matt Deggs is more of go pound people into submission and play good defense behind your pitching staff, which sometimes is a little shaky. Meatloaf was right. Two out of three ain't bad. And so but I think they have a chance, and we may not see it till midseason, but I think they have a chance to be very good in all three facets.
To your point about two out of three ain't bad, I went back and looked. I think it's been 40-something years since we had swept an opening weekend on the road.
Right.
Now, to be fair, we only played about 20% of those games on the road opening weekend.
Sure.
So there weren't a whole lot of them, but it's been 40-something years. So two out of three ain't bad. Who I think Rice is not the same Rice that we played last year.
Yeah, we're going to find out.
It's still early.
You know, the thing about Rice, were they in Round Rock over the weekend? They were in some tournament over the weekend, I think. The thing about Rice that gives me pause is their game two starter opening weekend was a guy who was their catcher the year before. That doesn't speak well for their pitching staff. I don't know. I don't know how good they're going to be. But they played who? Sam Houston.
And played Stanford three
times. And
then
played Stanford three times, and they lost all three games. Now, they beat Sam Houston. So they're 2-5. And then they got Texas Tech coming up. I'm not sold on Rice being a good club again this year.
I agree. I'm just saying they're better than they were last year.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure that's true. We'll see.
My eyes, I was there.
Show me. Show me.
Yeah.
Now, you were there, I wasn't, and we saw them the two midweek games last year. So you could be right. Maybe they're better.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're a 500 club.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well. The thing that you talked about the walks and the hit batters, and I agree with you totally on the sense of, because in the first two games, I want to say, which bugged me so much, two outs and we walk a batter. But the thing about it was that on the first two games, I think it happened 6 to 8 times, none of those runners scored. So that was impressive.
No, you've got guys with good stuff out there. It's just a matter of adjusting to the pitching system. And in some of the cases, you know, look, you're in Division I baseball now. And that other guys, they're getting a new lease after transferring, but there's going to be a learning curve with a new ball club. So I think they'll be all right.
I like the fact if Jake Hammond is moved back to the bullpen, because I talked to him after his start, which at Rice, which I thought he did great for as cold as it was and everything. For him to go five innings, I thought was perfect. First game of the year, cold. And it was one of those things that I was just like, I talked to him, I asked him, I said, you know, how do you like starting? He goes, first time since high school that he was a starter. So his time at LSUE, he was a relief pitcher. And the other guy that you mentioned was C.J. Willis. I think he looks so smooth catching the ball, but he's very deliberate with his throws to first base and to get runners. I think he's playing second base tremendously. And I think it's going to be hard to get him out of that starting lineup at times, because now Deggs has him in the game hitting against left-handed pitching, which he didn't last year.
He does seem to have more confidence in CJ. And it's, you know, I still think his kryptonite is the changeup from the right-handed pitcher, you know, and that's something he's got to work on. But no, I think he's playing with more confidence. By the way, as we're recording this, the women's basketball all-conference team's announced, and Lene Wheaton of Louisiana on the third team, Zenaree Antoine of Texas State Coach of the Year, Kelsey Thompson, South Alabama Freshman of the Year, Izzy Higginbottom, Arkansas State, the Newcomer of the Year, Kiki Jefferson of James Madison, the Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, Emma Merriweather of ULM, and the Sixth Woman of the Year, Peyton McDaniel of James Madison. Also, Jordan Brown has been named the Lou Henson National Player of the Week for his performance against South Alabama last week. Now, if we stay here long enough and talk long enough, the men's all-conference team's coming out today too, but we'll probably be done by then.
Yes. I also noticed that Jordan collected the Sun Belt Conference Player of the Week.
He did. Fourth time. So he won it four times, and Kinsey won it four times. You know what? You know who I want to see win that award? But if Kinsey wins it, I'm not going to sit there and say he doesn't deserve it.
Yeah.
Because he's had a great year. And what would make me very happy is if the two of them shared the award. You know, it wouldn't be the first time that had happened. But one fan base is going to be really upset, I think, whichever one it might be.
So I know seasons are not equal, Jay, but at the same time, there's a little bit of history there. So I've got the stats going back to 2002, and the 6-1 start by this Cajun team is tied with 2013 and 14, and 2005 that started 6-1. The only one that it's bested by is 2007, 7-0 start. So, and the thing that all of those teams had in common, and it's way early, but they all made the NCAA tournament. So
that is correct.
I know it doesn't. What's that? Past performance doesn't make future success.
Yeah, whatever. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future results.
But at the same
time, people can and do lose money.
But at the same time, you've got to start somewhere, and I just think this is, you know, the 285 batting average is the best batting average that the team had through seven games going back to 2013 team that batted 336. It's just all these numbers are telling me that we're in the right. Now, the numbers on the pitching side, the walks are the most walks by any pitching staff over the last. But at the same time, I think those are things that can be cleared up. Because in 2016, Chris Sharpenjay started the season as our Friday night guy. And we know how that season finished with Gunnar Leger, Wyatt Marks, and Evan Guillory. I'm not saying we have any of those guys on this team yet, but we don't know that. It's a long season.
It is a long season. And, you know, I think seven games in, you can't draw any conclusions at all, whether it be comparison. But I'll say this, it's nice to get off to a good start. Now, this weekend, they're going to play a team that's better than BYU and a lot better than Rice, because Campbell is going to be an NCAA team. They're going to win 40 games this year. They had two guys that went in the top 10 in the draft. They got another first-round guy this year. The Campbells are very good. And, you know, then you have High Point after that, who's competitive. You start conference play with Arkansas State, who's going to be better, but they're still picked last. Then you go to South Alabama, who got swept by Nebraska over the weekend in Mobile. Then you come home, you got App State. But then you look toward the end how this thing wraps up when your last six games are against Texas State and Southern Miss. So I'd rather play those teams later than sooner, especially with some inexperienced guys out there. I guess the point I'm making is you have a chance to win games over the next month or so and really have a nice record by the time you start going on the road in conference play to go to Marshall and to JMU and the other places you're going to have to go. One other thing, and this will be a for folks who are listening that pay attention to the RPI. And during baseball season, we talk about the RPI a lot.
Way too much sometimes.
Well, I agree. Especially now.
Yes.
And let me explain why.
Kind of like my statistics I just told you.
Right, exactly. Let me explain why. Fans look at, okay, we're number 52, or we're number 22, or we're number 72. And then, you know, you get drummed. No, look at the RPI number. Look at the percentage. Okay, you're 52, but you're 0.03 of a point from 45, right? That sort of thing. One thing that we have learned the last couple of years now is it's not about the number on your RPI. It's not even your RPI value as much as it is quad one, quad two, quad three, quad four. If you notice the way the Cajuns have put their schedule together, they're playing a lot of games at home. They're also playing teams that, from an RPI standpoint, traditionally are worse than some of the other teams that they normally play in non-conference. Let me give you an example. Cajuns are going to play McNeese twice, Southeastern twice. They're always going to do that. But all of the other state schools, if we play you this year, guess what? We're playing at Russo Park. And so they've... The problem you run into with the Southland Conference in non-conference games is, with exception of Southeastern, a lot of them are quad four games, or at best quad three. And if you're at home and you lose to one of those, that's not good. So one of the things, and Matt Deggs did weeks of research on this, and he said, you know what? You can go ahead and you can play as many quad fours as you normally do, but you got to play them at home and you better win them. And if you do that, and it's the end of the season, and yeah, you were 13-1 or 14-0 against quad four, the committee looks favorably on that. They start to question three or four losses against quad four teams as much as they want to look at how'd you do against quad one. So there's a method to the madness of the scheduling this year. The RPI number probably isn't going to be as good because you're going to be playing teams that are well down in the 200s with some of the schools from the Southwestern Athletic Conference that you're going to play. And the value may be diminished also. But the committee now is looking more at how did you do in the four quads. And if you're not losing to bad teams, that means something to the committee.
Hard to disagree with any of that. And you would probably say that I'm right not to disagree with you.
Well, you know, I just know that, yeah, that Matt's done enough research on this to where, like I said, there's a method to his madness here in how he's scheduled, because he's learned a lot about how the committee does its business, because he's talked to a lot of people. And he did about 6 weeks of research and stuff before they started to put a schedule together.
Very interesting.
And one of the things that you don't want to do is you don't want to go on the road a lot in non-conference against teams. You don't. All right, Cajuns lost at Nichols last year. You can't go to Nichols and lose. You just can't. Now, you can play Nichols at home and beat them 15-2, and that's okay. That's a quad four win. But you can't take a quad four loss. And the problem with the Southland Conference is they don't have good RPIs, but they're good enough to beat you.
Yeah. So what you're saying is, hold on, boys, this is going to be a hell of a ride.
Oh, yeah, it is. And look, in the last month of the season, when people start screaming RPI, 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 we may have to do this podcast again.
The thing... you know, you brought up Texas State and Southern Miss. Texas State's going to be at home, Southern Miss on the road the last weekend of the year, Thursday, Friday, Saturday series. But if you're a Cajun fan, you better go, if you plan on making that trip, you better go find your tickets now, because seats have been sold out for Southern Miss. Standing room only tickets now. So if you want to sit down, you're going to go to the secondary market and pay a little money.
You also, it's also good if you know somebody who knows somebody, because there is a player pass list that some fans are able to get on. Although most of the time it's family members of the players. But no, they're sold out of seats for the entire season. Good for them. You know, good for Southern Miss. I'm glad they're in our league. And I can't wait to start beating them.
Absolutely. The last thing I want to say about baseball on my end, then I'll go to you for final comments, is that it was so great to see so many of the parents here all four nights of that BYU series. I mean, it's early on. They could have said, hey, I don't want to take off time right now. But you had the Hoods, the Rockefords, the Brocks, the Toits. You know, they were all here for all four games. And I'm sure there was other ones. DeBarge. I remember I met Kyle's mom this weekend. It was really great to see all of them here. And those are most of them are guys that are traveling from Houston, from Beaumont, around Tyler. So that's pretty nice.
It is. We've had good parental support for a long time now. And I know that's going to continue. Now we got to start indoctrinating some of the new parents.
Yes.
Okay. We need to tell them, okay, here's where we drink after the game. And but we will as time goes by. And when we start, conference play starts, we start getting on the road. We're going to meet a lot of new people, and it'll be great.
And for our first weekend at Rice, you had the Christies, you had the Tates. They were all there in Houston. So our parents are willing to travel, and I love that. I love to see it all. And the reason I bring it up, because you mentioned the player pass, they're usually pretty much taken up right now.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's going to be fun. Any final words on baseball before, or basketball or anything before we head out today?
Go Cajuns.
Absolutely. You've been listening to We're Talking, and we've been talking baseball. Raging Cajun baseball with the voice of the Cajuns, Jay Walker.
Any redistribution or reproduction of any part or all of the contents in any form is prohibited, except, who the hell are we kidding? Distribute it, share it, put it in your podcast, broadcast it, or put it on social media. Just give credit where credit's due.